If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grind America Show. Coming at you this week, I think for the first time in a decade, we got Jim Harreld back. It's got to be 9 or 10 years since we had Jim Harreld on the show. You know,
one of our, yeah, it was 2014,
one of the original guests we had. We were chasing people down. So, yeah, Jim's back. Of course, we got everybody's favorite podcaster over here, Graham, rocking the pink Jeep Dunlop.
Yeah, how's it going?
Good. How was your pink deep ride today?
It was good, yeah. It was kind of wet, a little bit rainy, you know, kind of gray. It's supposed to rain here for 7 days.
Yeah, it rained pretty much the whole way. From when I left this morning to Kindersley or whatever it was and back, it pretty much rained the whole way.
Yeah.
At some points raining like so hard, it's hard to like, because I was talking to Brandon Powell for a long time and it's like you can't even hear the phone. The rain is just hammering down on the windshield so hard. But yeah, it was a nice prairie drive. I mean, the beauty part about all the rain is it is just amazingly green everywhere.
Yeah, it is very green. Yeah, even here we had some dirt in the backyard, like some, you know, some dead grass in areas. And I just sort of raked it all and cleaned it all up and perforated it and just thought, let's see what grows. And a bunch of stuff just grows like. Grows there. It's pretty cool just to see it spring back to life.
It's green, baby. Yeah. Green beats yellow. It'll be yellow in that ground.
Are you going to flood there at all? Or?
I don't know. I haven't been really paying attention. Do they have the water back on?
Well, yeah. And yeah, maybe this will solve your water problem.
I can't remember if I don't have a water problem. I can't remember if I seen the sign or not on the way. And the staff officer took the signs down. They were saying it was going to be early. I thought they said this weekend.
You know, you're not the only city having this issue, right?
I heard, who else?
I think Quebec City, I think.
I think it's some little shitty city in Quebec.
Oh, is it? A city in Quebec, not Quebec City?
Yeah.
Sorry, some I got little, that.
Some little shithole city you never heard of, you know? I mean, Quebec is communist as fuck. Let's be honest. Quebec is lost. It's been lost for a long time. Quebec is so communist that they've wanted to leave the country to be more communist for, you know, 50 fucking years.
That's why we moved out in 78, 79, I guess, is when we came out west.
Came out west. Look at you now, heading back east. We'll do the full loop.
No, I'm going to stop here. In the prairies and just stay here, small little town, nice and quiet.
Dude, I was going through some spots up on that, because I took the upper highway on the way back, up Highway 9 the whole way, and, you know, there's some spots.
That's the way you came, isn't it?
I came up through some fucking hillbilly roads, man. It was
Did you come through the valley near Drumheller and then go up that back way?
I went back through Drumheller, kind of. Oh, on the way there, I was like zigzagging. I went through Hussar.
Oh, wow.
I went down the one road, dude, to Hussar. I think it's 564, maybe, or 567.
Yeah.
Maybe 561.
And then that thing goes
straight for 100 miles. 100 miles. There's not one turn, not a bend.
That's what I'm talking about. And then you cut back to 9 afterwards then? Off of that?
I got up on the 9 right after, like, Nickelback Town.
That road. I've gone all the way to the border.
I was on some fucking roads, so
three,
dude.
Three stop signs later, like, and 2 hours drive later, and you're at the border.
Yeah, I was on some roads, like something with no center line.
Huh.
But it said it was going to take, I took 31 minutes off the time on the way there.
That's when you beat me there. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty quick. And because you're on just those back roads the whole time, I was trying to talk to Mike, Liberal Mike, who becomes a lord later. But I was trying to talk to him, but the cell phone kept dropping out. And I was like, I talked to him for a half an hour or something. I was like, dude, I haven't seen another car. Not one car the whole time we've been talking.
I know. And that's what, like, doing these drives, like, even when we went down south from Calgary to northern Arizona for one of our trips, like, there's nothing there. There's hardly anything. And then you come all the way east for hours and hours. You can drive 7 hours with hardly anything, like
nothing.
One little town like Saskatoon.
I mean, honestly, we should shut the fuck up.
I know, we should, like, the world's overcrowded and all this stuff. And you're like, oh my God, there's like days driving of nothing.
Yeah, we should just, yeah. We're in a pretty special place, right? That goes right from here down to Mexico, and there's nobody in it. And we should just shut up about it. I was like, I drove all the way to see you today. It's like fucking 4 hours at 80 or 90 miles an hour, and don't see, like, no towns. It was like, yeah, I had to duck into the one town to get gas because there's, you know, I could go the whole way there without going through a single town down the zip, this road, that road. Yeah, the green. It was good. Made it back. Now podcasting. So you got your cord care package and your book.
Yep. I got my sandcastle book. What was it called? The Stories of the Sand. I mean, that episode's coming out next week. It's fantastic with a friend of the show in the chats, Dasmo, and his he's a sandcastle champion. Unbelievable.
It is pretty. It's what did you look? Did you peruse the book?
No, I haven't looked through the book yet. No.
Yeah, it's pretty well.
But I do have something else I want to talk about too, about some of our other shows and stuff, because we had that wrap up with from the Cosmic Summit. I think, was that even last week? It was probably just last week even. So I've got the Substack that I came across that I wanted to talk about. Can I share the screen here for a sec?
Sure.
So this is about, I'm just sharing the screen, not that anybody can see this because it's only audio, but this is from Francis Leader, Fusion Energy and the Promise of the Fusion Torch. So this is kind of like, Darren's...
is this the Bendall stuff?
Lightning this is mine? Well, no, it's not. That's the thing, right? So she talks a little bit about the Club of Rome and stuff in here, but then she gets back to this novel. So she chose to write this controversial research into her fiction novel, right? And in one chapter, she introduced the fusion torch of infinitely recyclable matter. Now, I want you to think about Cosmic Summit and Malcolm Bendel when I read this. this is from the book. And she quoted the inventors of the fusion torch verbatim in that chapter. In the comments, I was able to emphasize the information hidden in my fictional novel. For materials processing and natural resources, the plasma torch, operating at temperature below that required for fusion, can break down and separate many materials into their constituent elements and isotopes. My cat's in the way now. Meaning that chemical and nuclear waste can be processed into valuable resources. Such plasma torches can be a driver towards the higher densities of power achievable with a self-sustaining fusion reaction, at which point we could theoretically extract many times the current annual production of iron, copper, aluminum, and many other resources from virtually any cubic mile of dirt and reprocess the valuable concentrations of materials in landfills. But those words were not fiction. I knew they were working on fusion energy. King Charles III gave hints of it in his write-up in the Carta Terra documents. It seems to me that this phenomenally powerful technology has been carefully concealed, but continue with considerable financial investment from private-public partnerships. So then she mentions here, cold fusion revolution finally underway. So She links to an old Bridey on with Mike, the health ranger. But what she says here is now finally in 2024, we can view explanations. Well, as much as they want us to know, that is from the Royal Institution we hear. So I'm just going to play a clip. Now, this is from like the Royal Institution, dude. So this is why this is important. This is the latest developments in fusion energy from this year from the Royal Institution.
We need a long-term sustainable energy source. And fusion holds great promise. It could be that transformative, that transformational solution that the world needs. It produces no greenhouse gases, no long-lived radioactive waste, has an abundant fuel supply, and it would be on-demand energy.
On demand.
Out of the lab, and a private industry is growing up now. This chart here is from the Fusion Industry Association, and it shows the increase in the amount of private fusion companies in recent years. You can see there's been quite a spike after 2017. In total, we've had over 6 billion.
2017 happens to be when Malcolm was working on his theory of everything and his model and everything as well.
$1 billion invested in private fusion companies. Where's that investment coming from? It's no longer just from high net worth individuals. We're also seeing strategic capital such as Breakthrough Energy Ventures, Legal & General, energy companies like Chevron, Equinor, Eni, sovereign wealth funds as well, like Temasek, GIC. So it's no longer a niche investment. It's actually really broadening in the investment space. And that's because we've been seeing a lot of progress in recent years, as I said, moving fusion out of the lab. Progress such as public labs breaking fusion records. We've been seeing private companies validating their approaches. And governments are taking notice. We've seen fusion strategies or commitments to fusion now from the UK, the US, Japan, and Germany. They're putting together regulatory frameworks and discussing how fusion will be regulated or the technologies licensed. And another thing that we've been seeing increasingly is partnerships, both public-private partnerships between the private fusion companies and working with public or national labs where there's a lot of expertise and great facilities, but also partnerships between private fusion companies and big corporations, like the partnership between Commonwealth Fusion Systems and the energy company Eni.
So, I mean, I don't want to keep going on here too much. Maybe I'll just skip forward a bit.
I'm sure that you all know about fusion and what it is, but I will just give you a brief reminder. So fusion is a process that produces energy in the stars, like the sun.
So that's the problem with this is it's they're talking about hot fusion, right? She mentioned cold fusion in the beginning of this thing and in this Substack, but and remember when Malcolm was on or when Randall first blew the lid on Rogan there and then all of a sudden we started seeing stuff come out about these huge this over unity in the tokamak. I think it was either in the tokamak or the TAE. But I mean, these are some of the fusion R&D that she's talking about, right? So, I mean, 100 plus private and public projects. And look at what this is, I think, when she says plasma gun. This is what she's talking about. I mean, these are massive, massive, like billions of dollars worth of projects. But I mean, they are shaped. There is some toroidal shaped stuff. Like, look at this. This is this ITER's mission, right? This is one of these big ones. Scientific and technological feasibility of fusion, burning plasma, tritium breeding to demonstrate the safety characteristics of a fusion plant. And then they have toroidal field coils in here. So it's interesting that they are spending billions looking for hot fusion. Manufacturing of all 19 coils completed. All coils have been delivered to the ITER site. If I go back here to ITER, which one is ITER? Here, it's this one here. So, I mean, you know, lots is happening. I mean, I think this is similar to I think this is how they're getting hydrogen, aren't they, for Alberta's stuff? Like, isn't this the hydrogen part of the hydrogen economy right now? You know, if it's the same thing?
I don't think the two are related, no.
Because it says here, based on the same process in the power of the sun, the stars, when a mix of two forms of hydrogen are heated to extreme temperatures 10 times hotter than that core of the sun, they fuse together to create helium and release huge amounts of energy. I guess that's the premise of this.
I think it's instead of splitting an atom, you're fusing them.
Yeah, but and here's... this, like, are we closer to limitless recycling of resources as promised by the fusion torch? So fusion, and then it goes into this thing like ionization and disassociation and then separation. I mean, that's kind of like what Malcolm's thing looks like in some ways. There's the little plasma. But I mean, you know, I kind of don't like the way she throws cold fusion in there. And then it's all about this multi-billion dollar hot fusion. Like, you know, so I included Bob Greenier's work. And on there,
is hot fusion just nuclear?
No, it's
fission, right?
No, yeah, that's fission. It's still fusion, but it has to be super extreme heat. Whereas the fusion that Malcolm Bendall and Bob Greenier are talking about is the LENR, the low energy nuclear reaction, which is a cold fusion. Which is they're still like even using that word cold fusion will get everybody's get a bee in the bonnets of everybody because it's been so. Demonized over the years. And then this is why, because look at all the billions of dollars that are going into the hot fusion, right? Why would they want cold fusion to work? Somebody can just attach a thunderstorm generator to a power plant and transmute the exhaust without a $1 billion setup. I mean,
well, that's cleaning up the exhaust is a lot different than using fucking hot fusion to power a billion homes.
Yeah, but I'm only just telling you like part of the thing, right? I mean, there's also the efficiency aspect of it and all that kind of stuff too, right? And he does, I mean, look, he's patented a warp drive, like,
but the,
whether it's workable or not, I mean, that's part of his new thing is that he mentioned it on our show a little while ago.
Yeah, it's, but he also said he was
the matter king to energy Scotland. Warp drive or whatever, right? What?
He also said he was the king of Scotland and Tasmania.
Yeah. I know, but I mean, maybe,
so it makes it hard. Maybe
he's in the bloodline. I mean, I don't know. He's also fulfilled a couple of prophecies. I mean, I know it sounds weird, but I mean, it probably would be weird if you're getting downloads of sacred geometrical ancient wisdom technology.
Maybe. I mean, I'm letting you roll with that. But speaking of that, I will roll into our, we have our new Lord Liberal Mike, warden of North Carolina.
North Carolina? No, Alabama. Maybe. Warden of Alabama. Alabama.
Did he leave North Carolina?
Well, I met him in North Carolina recently, but he's from New York, I think.
Wasn't he? Yeah, but he lives in North Carolina.
No, he lives in Alabama now, I think. What? We should confirm what like warden territory he is of, but
well, I mean, he can be warden.
Couldn't we start like big, and couldn't he be like the whole like
southwest,
east, or like east, like or the whole state until another right. Ward of the states?
Like, well, then it'd be like change him and Lynch, and I don't really want Lord Lynch.
I guess that's probably high maintenance to have to break down the territories as we get more.
They just get smaller, you know. For now, we could just say until we find out if it's Alabama or North Carolina, which I'm sure I'm correct on. But just in case, we'll do Lord of the Southeast. And he wants to be his title. His title is going to be, oh, wrong one. Shit. Okay, here we go. The title is going to be The Lord of the Excommunicated Liberals.
Oh, I like it.
Because he is an excommunicated, a self-excommunicated liberal. Anyway, of course, we got a run one time. We got a nice one time from Ryan.
Oh, I got a note from Ryan, too.
$50. You want to read it?
Yeah, Graham Darren, I'm a monthly supporter on The Outlawed and just sent a one-time $50 to the original show. I just tried searching via Google and Apple Podcasts and thought it might be easier to throw some money at you to get a definitive answer. I swear you had a doctor on who had an NDE and had some bacterial infection that made him essentially brain dead. Was it Eben Alexander? If so, what show number was it? You guys are doing great. And some other stuff that I might save for another time. Thanks for taking time to answer my question. Have a good weekend. Ryan from Delaware.
I don't know any brainworm reference.
No, that's Eben Alexander, but we haven't had him on. So he must have been thinking of some other show.
Oh, okay.
Kevin guy way back when we started the podcast, that was the big news in the NDE world, is that doctor came out with that book. Yeah.
Well, we also have some new nobles to welcome to the House of Nobles. Not lords yet, but nobles at least. We got Roscoe, who became a $39 Patreon.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah, and we should mention Laura Kutu updated her pledge from $1 to $3. So that's a big help. You know, that's a triple. She thinks we're worth three times as much. So thanks. And Peter Cosby signed up for $10 on Patreon. And we have Third Little Pig, which is Cody, signed up for $3.33 a month. So, awesome. You know, it's great to see some new nobles joining the ranks. This is what we like to see. Some new lords be great too, but welcome. Welcome. You know, thanks for the support. GrandAmerica.ca/support. Of course, guys, if you are getting some value from the show, if, you know, you decide what it's worth, we don't do ads. We don't do any of that other stuff. We just make all these podcasts, put them out to you, and you decide if it's worth nothing or $1 or $10 or $100 or $3 a month. I mean, we do come out with them once a week. I don't know the last time. We haven't missed a week of this show in as long as I can remember. So
yeah, maybe 11 years, if that.
Not more than twice, I wouldn't say.
Yeah.
Anyway, grabamerica.ca/support, guys, if you can, when you can. Of course, we got our other podcast. Someone said on YouTube that we beg for money more than an evangelical church.
I like it.
GrandAmericaOutlawed.ca, of course, the other podcast he was talking about. We do the roundups, all that fun stuff. I have the mashup for this roundup, which is kind of overplayed, but I mean, it's just funny to see the entirety of the mainstream media in two different countries just turn on Joe Biden on a dime. It's like, where'd they get their marching orders? Anyway, I got a clip that's just like, well, bam, 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 one after another for the roundup this week. Of course, we have addlebrain.ca where you can get all the audiobooks. And we have the trips. We have the, Summer Fun 2024 sale going on right now where you can get in on our Columbia Gorge trip, which is coming up in September, or our Invermere trip with Brandon Powell, which is coming up in November, where we do the hot springs and the ice bath and all that fun stuff. And we're actually adding on some add-ons onto that, some exciting ones, like a shroom night the last night. You can do an extra night, get into some shrooms, allegedly, you know, maybe some shiitake, some portobello. And then I'm doing the pre-trip hunting trip already, so we're going to offer some slots for this. That's because all-inclusive, you can do the hunting standalone as well. So if you guys want to get details on all that, go to contact@thecabin.com and either click on contact at the chalet for the Invermere one, or I think it's the other one's called the Columbia Gorge with Randall Carlson. Those are the two that we got going right now. Check those out. Use that coupon code SUMMERFUN 2024. You can save 10%. That's a lot of money. That's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars on these things. So head over there. That sale only goes, that's the freedom sale. You know, it goes from July 1st, Canada Day, to July 4th. It ends July 5th. So it's only this week, guys.
I was going to suggest freedom as the coupon code, actually. It's funny you mentioned that.
Yeah, you know, well, neither of us are quite as free as we used to be, but...
Right, speaking of that, happy Canada Day. It's right now. It's Canada Day.
157 days of occupation by a hostile Canadian government.
What? 157 years or days?
157 years of occupation.
Oh, yeah, days, yeah.
Oh, I meant years. Plus, well, days too. Both were correct.
Yeah. Yeah, just doesn't feel the same this Canada Day like other
185 days of the year. Halfway through the year.
Canada, the 3-star, selling itself as a 5-star.
Might be 2-star.
Might be 2-star now.
I mean, it's pretty out here, but if I was down in Toronto and shit, I'd be like, gross, man. I couldn't imagine. If it looks like the bathroom on that airplane, I could not imagine. Gets to be a little bit much. So what else do you got for us? What's the new?
Oh, that's about it, I guess, really. I'm almost finished a huge book. It's going to be amazing. Actually, the last three pages, or not the last three, but there was three pages today that were outstanding about politics. This is written in the early 1900s, called The Decline of the West from Spengler. Holy, some of it's way over my head. Like, most of it is way over my head. There was some stuff today that just makes me think, man, they've been talking about this stuff forever, and what's happening to us is just not really new. It's like, it just seems kind of normal. You know, this has just been the eternal struggle.
The eternal struggle. It's the nature of the video game.
It seems like it.
It's the nature of the video game. It seems to be. All right, guys. Well, I guess we'll leave it there. We hope you enjoyed our lazy ramblings this week. Do you have a bio for Mr. Jim Harrell?
Well, I kind of do. I mean, he's been podcasting on the paranormal like the longest. We think it's the longest paranormal show still going since 2005. I mean, that's back like right. I mean, that's just where before podcasts were even podcasts, or very close to it. He's among a handful of pioneers of the medium. His programs have stood the test of time, and the Paranormal Podcast and Campfire remain among the most popular in the genre. He's developed a loyal following that spans the globe. In addition to his free podcast at jimharrell.com, he also hosts a series of premium podcasts on the supernatural and related subjects. As a result, he's become a published author with his Campfire series. So we talk about his latest one, Campfire 6. I'm getting attacked by my cat again. This is not going to be good. Oh my God, Zeus is just losing it. Campfire 6 was full of amazing stories, and they've done a really good job at just like a huge variety of different stories. Like, it's not just ghost stories. I mean, it's everything, like time slips, UFOs, and paranormal, and ghosts, and Sasquatch, and all kinds of stuff. So he's among the top Apple podcasts, of course. If you want to learn more about Jim or inquiring about sponsorship, media, or personal appearances, you can get there from his website, jimharrell.com. And he's also got, I mean, he holds a master's degree in applied communication theory and methodology as well. Accredited as certified digital media consultant as well. That's interesting. But you know what? I love what he says about our reality right now. It's like, just, it resonated so much with me, like just hearing what he's thinking about now and what he's been going through after doing like almost 3,000 episodes and talking to people. It's really, in some ways, relieving to hear very similar thoughts about what's happening in the world.
Some things never change, and some things do. America.ca/support, guys, and more important than anything, enjoy this chat with the enigmatic Jim Harrell.
We've got Jim Harrell with us from, I would say, like Jim Harrell's Paranormal Empire.
How are
I'm losing count, but glad to be here, guys. And we were just reminiscing, like, I think the first time we met was like 10 years ago at the old Paradigm Symposium up in Minnesota in 2014. So a few things have happened since then.
Yeah. I mean, it might have even been 2013. I don't know, because we went 3 years back then.
I know it was 2014.
Oh, dude.
I didn't go the middle year. Remember, I went the first year and then I didn't go and then I went again. Sometimes I forget there was three and then there was going to be a fourth. But then, you know,
symposium burnout, you know,
but it was a great event. And I was so glad to meet you guys and a lot of people there that I've stayed in contact with. It's the live events. I wish I did more of them. I got to start doing more of them. Sometimes it's good to get out from the little studio here and get out among real people.
Yeah, well, we were talking about that, like, because you do have a couple coming up. Why don't you mention them now? Because I was just at the Cosmic Summit as well, and I had an amazing time, and I met a whole ton of listeners from the show. I forgot to even give them a shout out on our little recap thing, but I mean, it was fantastic to meet a whole bunch of people that listen to the show and also like all the guests that present. And then I thought, man, this is just fun. We should do this more often. So talk about the ones you got coming up.
I love the cat there. That's great. That's a good touch. Well done. So the thing is that we've got actually coming up just this weekend, the 28th and 29th, it is Monster Fest 2. That's in my home state of Ohio, in Canton, Ohio. And they do a great job. It's the documentary makers, Small Town Monsters, Seth Breedlove and his crew. And they are just, they blow my mind because they've made a paranormal movie studio, like in the middle of Ohio. And their content they put out is like better than the stuff you see on cable. I mean, they just do a great job. And then I guess last year, Seth decided, hey, I want to do a live event. And he did a great job with it. And they're doing it again. And it's just going to be this coming week. You can find that information at smalltownmonsters.com. So that's 28th and the 29th. And then in August, I'm going to be at the Michigan Paracon, which is really, I think, the biggest one in the American Midwest in terms of paranormal conferences. And there's going to be all the TV people are going to be there. People like Amy Bruni, Richard Estep, Dave Schrader. There's going to be a cast of thousands. It's like the big kind of huge paranormal event every year, and I've never gone to it. So I'm going to fix that this year. And the dates on that, I'm just looking it up now, August 22nd through the 24th.
Are you speaking that'll be coming up?
I think we might be doing a live podcast. I'm not 100% sure what they have in mind. We've talked about it, but I'm definitely one of the personalities who will be there. Okay. But I'm like way down on the food chain. They've got all the big TV people and stuff. But it'll be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. And the funny thing is, and I'm sure you guys have the same thing, you interview all these people over the years and you never get to meet them in person. I mean, like Richard Estep, who's written a gabillion paranormal books now, I've interviewed him probably 10, 15 times. I've never met him. I'll get to meet him up in Michigan. So very cool. I love doing it. And I recommend whether it's, the events you guys are at, events I'm at, or, these paranormal events are great things to go to meet people who love weird stuff like we do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The fringe of the society. You can meet all the I love seeing we got in touch here after 10 or 11 years and, just to see you've been going strong. You've got all these podcasts. You've been doing it. You're the longest running paranormal podcast, I guess.
As far as I know. I mean, I basically put that out there and I said, look, if I'm wrong, somebody tell me. Because I tried to research it and there were like my first started in July of 2005. It'll be next month will be 19 years. There were a couple. There were like three or four of them, but none of those are still around. And then there were ones that started like a month or two after me that are still going, like Dave Schrader shows. He started just a few months after me. Paracast started, I think, a couple months maybe after me. So as far as I know, the Paranormal Podcast is the longest running paranormal podcast on the internet. So I'm going to stick by that. If somebody knows something different, I'm open to correction. But as far as I could tell, it is. I guess I'm just stubborn.
Did you have any beefs along the way or anything like that? I think for a while the Paracast didn't like us. I can't remember why, but
I never really had any beefs with other paranormal podcasters. I had a, I'm not going to say who it was, but there was like a skeptical podcaster that really like attacked me on social media and attacked Stanton Friedman, the late great ufologist, because I'd had Stanton on the show multiple times. I actually have a really kind of weird story about what happened with Stanton, which was kind of sad, which was very sad, which I'll tell you in a minute. But anyway, so this skeptic guy said all these nasty things about us. And then the skeptic guy ended up going to jail for something, like some kind of fraud or something. And then, this is what's really funny. Years later, the publicist for the skeptic guy had a book out. And his publicist had the nerve to email me and ask him to be on my show. And I found the original post that he made from like 2007, where he was really nasty to me and Stanton Friedman. And I linked it and I said, no, he will not be coming on my show because of this. But honestly, other than that, and to be honest with you, I've had good relations with skeptics. I've had Dr. Michael Shermer on my show. I've had Joe Nickel on my show, Ben Radford. I have no problem talking with skeptics. We'll have a nice two-way conversation. But if you're going to call me names on the internet, don't ask to be on my show. So that's really the only, quote, beef I think I've ever had. I really seem to get along pretty well with all the other paranormal podcasters. I try to have them on my show. They're nice to have me on their shows. We've all gotten along pretty well. And the way I look at it, the more people that listen to paranormal podcasts, we all win, right?
Exactly.
And the thing is that, you know, I mean, I know there's only so many hours in a day, but nobody is the same. In other words, and I was talking to Dave Schrader about this, you know, he's going to have a different take than I'm going to have a take, then you guys are going to have a take, then Jimmy Church is going to have a take. Everybody's got a different way of approaching it, and different people are going to appeal to different folks. So, you know, I just think the more the merrier, the more people that listen to paranormal podcasts, the better for all of us. So I've always tried to be a pretty open door and pretty open book with everybody, and it seems to have worked so far.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, more collaborating. I think it brings up, yeah, it sort of lifts, it's, you know, the time thing. And
I will tell you the sad story about Stanton Friedman since I put it in there. Well, anyway, I had interviewed Stanton several times over the years, a few times, I guess is more accurate. He was actually either, I think he was my second guest on the Paranormal Podcast in 2005, which blew my mind because I had no idea what I was doing. And I think he was kind of like a pod what? Yeah.
Well, but anyway, that was way back. I mean, that's
I mean, nobody knew about it. So anyway, this was, gosh, when was this? It had to be maybe 2018, I think. I can't remember the year he passed. It was the year he passed. So anyway, Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, Coast to Coast AM was having an event here in Ohio. And one of the speakers, this was in Columbus, which is a couple hours away from where I live. I live in the Cleveland area. And one of the speakers, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, was ill. Rosemary was great. She was fantastic. Unfortunately, she also passed. But they needed a fill-in. And since I'd been on Coast to Coast a number of times as a guest, they knew I lived in the area. And they asked, and I said, yeah, I'd be honored. So I went down. It was me. It was the lady who the Ghost Whisperer TV show was based on, who's from Cleveland, Marianne Winkowski, and it was Stanton Friedman. So I was obviously like, you know, the weak sister on this thing. But anyway, I got to first of all, I shared an Uber from the hotel over to the venue with Stanton. Then we talked for probably at least an hour, hour and a half in the green room while George Nori was singing, practicing with his band, because I guess he sings at his events.
A crooner.
Yeah, a bit of a crooner there. And I thought, this is great, because Stanton didn't remember me, because he's been interviewed by about 1,000,001 people, and a lot of them more important than me. But that was cool. I didn't mind because I got to spend an hour and a half with Stanton Friedman talking about UFOs. I thought, this is great. I'm going to wait a few weeks. I'm not going to be a stalker, but then I'll get in touch with him and he'll remember me and we'll have a great interview. This will be fantastic. And I got to meet the great man. So anyway, after the event, I had dinner with Stanton Friedman and the Ghost Whisperer lady, which was kind of surreal. Not in a negative way. It was just, wow, I'm having dinner with Stanton Friedman and the Ghost Whisperer lady. So we say our goodbyes. That's a Saturday night. You know, I sleep over. In the morning, I drive home. You know, just pleasant thing, kind of cool thing. Like Tuesday that week, I open up my Facebook and Stanton Friedman has died.
Wow.
He died en route from that venue or from Columbus to his home up in Canada. I think he passed in the Toronto airport. Wow. And I'm like, oh my God, I just saw him. And he seemed, you know, he was probably around 80, I think, but he seemed to be, you know, he's very sharp. I saw him wobble a little bit once. He had some books. I asked him if he could help. He's like, no, I'm okay. I'm just fine. You know, but it was just wild to me that I saw the great man. And then this sad thing happened. But anyway, I'm finding more and more the longer that I do this, I'm having a lot of guests who pass. Yeah. And it's really depressing. I had a gentleman on a little over a month ago. I interviewed him and I interviewed him about near-death experiences. And then he literally passed about a week or less than a week after I put his episode out. Jim Willis. He was a great researcher, great writer. You know, the longer you get to do this, the more guests that you talk to who, you know, it's in a way, it's an honor to be able to kind of, I don't know, codify or record their thoughts and make sure that they get saved for posterity or whatever. But it's kind of wild sometimes.
So you've been doing this 19 years. You interviewed, you know, all the greats. What, let's start with like, what's the craziest thing you ever heard? Cause you're doing the call-in stuff, right? I mean, that adds a whole another aspect to it where it's like, we haven't done a lot of call-in, but I mean, you know, some of the best parts of the old Coast to Coast and the Art Bell stuff was the call-in people. So, I mean, I'm curious what's just the craziest story you've heard? Maybe one that's even, was there any that were too crazy to even put out on the podcast? Because, you know, you're definitely keeping it a little more PG over there than we would in Grimerica. So, I mean, you're probably getting a bunch of stuff that's like over the top sometimes, right?
Well, I got to say, probably the wildest story I ever heard. And I've been on your show before years ago. I might have even told this story. Because I tell it like, because everybody asked a similar question, and this is the story I tell, because it is the wildest, but it is like Twilight Zone material. And there are a couple little twists to it, too, that even happened after the fact. So this story is, and I just literally told this on another show, this story is from, the storyteller is T.I. Her name is T.I.Y.I., T.I. And she's from the American state of Michigan, but this story happened in Wisconsin. Every summer, she would drive up with her family, and they'd spend some time at a campground up there. So anyway, this one night, her and one of her friends at the campground, his name was Bob, decided they wanted to go see a band. And the band was about an hour away. So they drive about an hour, they go see this band. It was great. It was fun. They actually ended up staying late because they're both musicians and they were talking about gigs and different things with the musicians. So they left about 3 o'clock in the morning. So anyway, they're driving back to the campground. Now it is pitch black dark. It is like, you know, basically, you know, there's city dark and then there's rural dark. And this is rural dark, 2-lane road. Very good for listening to Coast AM or a paranormal podcast. So anyway, they're driving. They get about 10 minutes and T.I. says to Bob, hey, you know, I got to use the restroom. And Bob says, well, looking around, he says, you better pull up a tree because there's not much here. So she says, don't worry about it, just drive fast. So they keep driving. And about 10 minutes, they come upon this bar. And the place is lit up. The joint is jumping. There's cars in the parking lot. There's a thump, thump, thump of music. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. It's like 3:30 in the morning. This place should like legally be closed, but it's open. And they said, hey, let's take advantage of it. They pull in. They go in, T.I. goes to the restroom. Bob gets, I presume, a couple soft drinks from the bar, comes back. T.I. comes back. They're talking. And Bob says, I'm really glad that we came here because on this wall, you'll see this huge mural of the Old West. And I've heard about it, but I've always wanted to see it. And here it is, because Bob was also a painter. So they're talking a little bit, and the place is kind of weird. I mean, the people are kind of weird. They're kind of like blankly smiling, and it's just kind of a weird vibe. So they notice this guy goes up to this old Wurlitzer jukebox. It's like a bubbler jukebox with actual records in it. And at the time, you know, records weren't cool like they are again now. So that was unusual. And he puts on the song Let's Twist Again by Chubby Checker. And he walks up to T.I., and he smiles real big, and he has a mouthful of rotten teeth, and he says to T.I., want to dance? And she holds up her cane because she uses a cane. She said, no, I don't do much dancing. She said she was glad she had that cane. So anyway, the song's playing, and they notice something else weird about that picture. Everybody in that picture was actually in the bar. There's like some lady standing, you know, in real life, and she's a dance hall girl in the bar. There's some guys playing pool in the real life bar. They're playing cards in the thing, and it goes on and on. And they started talking about, and they rationalized it. They said, look, you know, these people are regulars. The artist just included them in, you know, to tribute, as a tribute. So they're sitting there a little bit more, and they noticed something else they didn't notice. There's a couple of double doors. You know those swinging doors where the gunslinger comes in and says, I want to see the sheriff, you know, or whatever, in the Westerns. But they noticed something they didn't notice before. There's two little misty columns right by those doors, right in front of those doors. One's smaller, one's taller. And it's like a Polaroid picture, and it's almost like developing in. After a few minutes, they notice one is a man, one is a woman. One's shorter, one's taller. Then a little bit later, they notice one has curly hair. Well, T.I. has curly hair. The woman has curly hair. Then they notice that the woman figure has cowboy boots. T.I. has cowboy boots. Then they notice that not only is there a female figure along with a male figure, the female figure has the curly hair, the boots, and a cane, just like T.I. So at that point, they say, let's get out of here. So they get up, they get ready to leave, and the people are like motioning, come back, come back, come back. And they go ahead and they leave. When they, T.I. says, when they closed the door, everything went pitch black dark. All the signs were out. All the music was gone. It was like the place was totally shut up and hadn't been open for hours. They turn around. Where there have been plural cars in the parking lot, there's one car. There's their car. And they leave. Now, you would think that's the whole story, but it's not. So she's braver than I am because I'm a big chicken. So next day or two, she decides, nobody believes me. I'm going back. So she gets her sister or a friend. I can't remember who. But she gets somebody from the campground. They go up. She goes at 8 o'clock at night. She doesn't wait till 3:30 in the morning this time. And she goes in and she goes to the jukebox. And there's a jukebox, but it's at that time a modern jukebox with CDs. No Chubby Checker, no Let's Twist Again. She looks at the mural. The mural is the same, except there's no figures in the doorway. Her and Bob are not in the doorway. She says, well, let me talk to the bartender. There's a young woman tending bar. She goes and talks to the young woman. Say, hey, I was in here the other night, and there was this big, strong, good-looking, strapping farm boy-looking guy bartending. And the one said, that's strange. There's nobody that tends bar here that looks like that. The only ones that tend bar are me here are me and my elderly father. And with that, T.I. left. Now, he used to say she's never been back, but she actually did end up going back. Well, this story made such an impression on me, I decided I wanted to meet T.I. And by the way, this place does exist. There are photos of it. The researcher Chad Lewis, the great cryptozoology researcher up in Wisconsin area, has taken photos and shared them with me and online. So I decided I want to meet T.I. and do a video interview on this. So in 2019, pre-pandemic, I drove up to Michigan with a videographer and we did a video a package on it. And I met with T.I. I talked with her. I interviewed her. You know, she's retired from a respected profession. I got to meet her in person, saw her eye to eye, met with her and her husband at their home. I believe her 110%. She seems to be totally credible to me, totally honest to me. And I don't know what to do with it. Now, the Roadhouse Saloon, it's a place that actually exists. As I said, Chad got pictures of it and shared them with me. I incorporated that in my Jim Harold YouTube channel, and it's over there if anybody wants to see it. And I know the place was in business before the pandemic. I tried to call them so I could get a comment from them about this, because I'm sure that they've had people visit saying, hey, this is the Roadhouse Saloon. Plus, also, I know it was on the Spooked podcast because I shared that info. T.I.'s, I connected those two because the Spooked people asked me and I did that for them. So she's been on multiple podcasts talking about this. So I know that the owners have to know about this, but nobody ever called me back. So I don't really know the status of the Roadhouse Saloon, but I know it was in business. It did exist. It was a real place and the mural was real as well. So that's probably my favorite, weirdest, all-time campfire story.
I love that. I mean, that's what I like about your book is it's got, and we'll talk about your latest book, but I mean, you've got all kinds of really wide variety of stuff in there, right? Time slips and NDEs and UFO stuff and like sort of MK Ultra type stuff.
Yeah.
I guess you would call that Roadhouse thing a time slip or something.
Like, alternate universe. I have no idea. But her point to me was, you know, how many people go missing every year? And maybe if her and Bob had stayed there, maybe they would have gone missing and people would have thought, oh, they ran off together or whatever. but she was glad they got out of there. I don't know. And I mean, a lot of people would say, oh, come on, Jim, that's got to be made up. And I mean, maybe I would have thought that, too, if I hadn't gotten to meet her. I don't know. I mean, you've probably heard it too. You met people that had crazy stories and things you might not believe on paper, but once you meet them, it's like, wow, they're telling the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. We noticed that with our show that a lot of people wanted to write in their stories because we would read synchronicities and sightings from people. And that's sort of what your show is based on is like there, and people have this desire. And really since podcasting, I mean, really since people started to open up to this sort of other, you know, this other realm of stuff that they've been able to share their stories. And I mean, that's what your whole thing is based on. You have 6 books on it, your show. I mean, has this changed your view on the paranormal at all over all these years? Like, how has your view shifted? I'm really interested on what you think and your take on it.
Well, here, first of all, I will say like, you know, back in the day, I was like, okay, ghosts are dead people, UFOs are aliens, cryptids are animals. Like I believed in all this stuff, but I thought, oh, I got it all figured out. And this goes to here, straight line here, straight line here, straight line there. Now, after 19 years of doing it, 15 years of doing this show, hearing people's stories, I'm more convinced than ever that the phenomena are real. I'm less convinced that I understand what they really are. I think there could be a trickster element to this. I think the one thing I do say to people is that the one thing I've been convinced of is that our existence is way weirder than we understand.
I love it.
I mean, and I talked to you about that one guy at PASS, Jim Willis, and he had something on his Facebook page. And I don't know if it was his quote or somebody else's, but I love this quote and I hope I get it right. The universe is not only stranger than we imagine, it's stranger than we can imagine. And I think that's pretty much it, is that we're like, you know, the allegory of the cave. We're in the cave and we don't have a damn idea of what's going on. That's why I always say, you know, I was recently, they asked me to be on the Uncanny podcast on BBC. And they said, this week, we want you to be our expert. And I said, well, I'm honored to be on, had a great time doing it, but I am not an expert. You can call me anything you want, but I'm not an expert because guess what? There aren't any experts. I mean, there's experts on the theories. Don't get me wrong. People like Stanton Freeman, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Brad Steiger, Nick Redfern. These people have forgotten more than I will ever know about this stuff. So there are experts on theory, on the theories and the history and all that. That's true. But in terms of what's actually going on, I don't know that any of us really have that pegged. I really doubt that any of us have that pegged. So I guess how it's evolved is, for example, ghosts. I do believe some ghosts can very well be dead people, but I don't believe that's a whole picture. I think you can have time slips. You can have residual haunting replays. You know, there's an interdimensional aspect to it, you know, where two different realities cross, the multiverse and all that good stuff. UFOs, I mean, we just saw it recently. I mean, again, I've always thought they're out there. Some Harvard researchers recently said they might be down here. Crypto-terrestrials, ultra-terrestrials. You look at the work of somebody like Mac Tonnies. You know, maybe the whole time we've been looking up there and we should be looking down here. You think about transmedium vehicles that can easily go from the ocean to the sky. You know, maybe the base is not up there. Maybe the base is down here. So do I think there are non-human intelligences and entities? Yes. Where do they come from? Maybe up, maybe down, maybe both.
Maybe all, yeah. I love it.
Or maybe they live in a way that in another dimension that only presents itself sometimes. So maybe they're not coming from a physical place, but they're coming from another dimension. So I think it's like expanded my mind as to the explanations for these mysteries that we investigate.
I love it. I would agree.
How have your views changed on some of the big picture things, like, you know, maybe God or intelligent design? How has that changed over the last 20 years? Has it stayed the same?
That stayed very much the same. I was just sitting out in my backyard the other day. I was actually having a debate with someone, an older person who basically, you know, believes when you're dead, you're done and everything. And this is a person I like very much. And I just said, well, look around you. How can any of this be by accident? I mean, in my mind, I mean, think about the tolerances you need for life to exist on Earth in terms of temperature, in terms of climate. And, you know, I pointed to a tree and said, so just think of the complexity of that tree alone, just that tree, nothing else, for it to survive and be able to get nutrients and grow. To me, and I hate to say this, but, you know, religious faith or the belief in a higher power, for me, it's not really about faith. To me, it's about common sense. I mean, that's my view, is that to think that all this is just an accident, it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. It just doesn't make sense. That we're all a cosmic accident, I don't think so. Now, if you get more specific about that, about who God is or those kind of things, you know, that's up for debate. But the idea that intelligent design and, you know, and that's not to deny something like evolution. If there's a creator, the creator could have set evolution into place. But I guess what I'm saying is, to me, that's always been something I've believed in. But here's another thing for you. People talk about the simulation theory, right? That we're living in a simulation. Okay, if you have a computer simulation, who creates that simulation? A programmer, right? What is a programmer? Someone who writes instructions and makes something happen and creates a world. Boy, that sounds a whole lot like intelligent design to me. So that's where the big pictures and then with the afterlife, I definitely believe there's an afterlife. I hope that that's the case. And that's actually the subject I think that does fascinate me the most, because I often say we're not all necessarily going to see a UFO, a Bigfoot, whatever it might be, but we're all going to go that path. You know, we're all going to physically die. So that's something that is truly universal. So that's one of the big questions for me. I do think there's an afterlife. Fascinated by the topic of NDEs. And I think my main thoughts on some of those things have maintained solid, but they have expanded. And I think I've become more open to alternate explanations.
Yeah, I love it. What a fantastic answer. I mean, especially the part about our reality. That's where I'm at now, is like, it's just stranger than we can even imagine.
And yeah.
That's kind of what, after studying this for so long, it's.
Yeah. It's
more perfect.
Yeah. And somebody said I read somewhere, it was on X or somewhere. I'm finally starting to call it X instead of Twitter. But anyway, somebody said something like, we might be like dogs and cats running through a library, you know, that the dogs have no idea of, you know, what's in the library, what the pages represent and those kinds of things. And it might be right.
The shelves, but you can't really read the.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah, it's just, I think we're pretty much in some ways clueless.
Yeah, I like it. So what about good and evil then? Because, I mean, even the UFO field, like I saw a great question on X today. It was like, why is there a shift in ufology towards angels and demons again? Like it is going, it is, seems to be moving that way. Now, whether it's like forced or not, you know, definitely sort of some of the main narratives on UFO X or whatever is moving towards that spiritual side of things instead of ETs.
Well, whatever it is, I don't think it's 100% benevolent, because if you think about, if you put stock into the abduction accounts going back to Betty and Barney Hill and things, it doesn't sound like a warm and fuzzy that some entity would, you know, rip you out of wherever and bring you into a spaceship and subject you to probes and examinations and terrify the hell out of you. That doesn't really seem what benevolent group would do. Now, there's a couple questions here, though. When we talk about ETs or cryptoterrestrials or wherever they are they necessarily a monolith? Are they one? Are there ones that are the good guys and the bad guys? That's a question. I mean, I am one of those people who believes in general in good and evil. I believe the paranormal, when I talk about the paranormal, I'm talking about ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, the whole thing. I think that it's a continuum, just like our life. I see this, our everyday life, I see this on Campfire. I'll get, you know, three stories of, you know, my grandma came through with this beautiful message, and I believe those stories. And then I'll get this other story. This demon scared the hell out of me, and I believe that story too. Not that everything's demon. I think that people tend to think everything's a demon. But so on one side, I think you have people who say, everything's a demon. It's all demon. It's all devil's work. And I don't believe that. But then you've got my new age friends who I respect, and they've got some great wisdom. But they'll say, oh, Jim, there is no evil. There's only a lower vibration. And I'm like, nah, there's evil. With all due respect. So I believe there's good and evil in pretty much every aspect of life. So would it be illogical to think that if we're talking about ET, that there's some good ones and some not good ones? Maybe even scarier is, what if they're neither good or bad? They just don't care. They look at us like maybe a scientist might look at a lab rat. You know what I'm saying? What if they don't look at us and say, oh, those poor humans, we want to help them. Or they don't say, oh, we want to conquer them. They're just like, oh, this is a, you know, kind of a less sophisticated species, and they're interesting to study. We're like ants to them. That might be more frightening than either of the other scenarios.
It wouldn't even just have to be ants. It could just be anything. It could be any animal in the animal kingdom. We're just kind of like, well, if it's edible, we might just fucking eat you. Or, you know, it's like, there's no real, lately, there hasn't really been any reverence for any of it.
Here's what I think about. What if, okay, so far things have been pretty cool. I mean, yeah, there's been abductions and things, but it's not like we've been, at least as far as we know, invaded and taken over. Although some people think that if you talk to people like David Icke. But anyway, the point being, what if, like, they're one of these days they want to build a cosmic superhighway, and we're just like the anthill in the way, and they just pave right over us? That's kind of a scary thought.
I think of it more as like we're a tourist hotspot right now, because we're a civilization that's just about to leap off the planet or destroy ourselves. You know, we're in that real window where it's like, you got to go see Earth these days, because like they're ready to either like burn or leave the planet and move on to the rest of the solar system.
Yeah, we're a tourist attraction. We're like Disney.
Yeah. Half my city doesn't have fucking running water right now, Graham. We're not going interplanetary anytime.
What about, Darren, do you got any questions? I could keep going forever. So, jump in.
Well, no, I mean, the good and evil one was a good one. I mean, what about like stuff like what Stephen Greer's doing? Graham was doing it for a while where they're going out and they're like summoning aliens with their brains or meditating some aliens in. Like, what's your thought on that? Because Graham was going and he stopped going because he got freaked out. Because
Stop.
I'm telling the story. He got freaked out because, you know, we had a guest on and he was like, well, what if that shit's evil? And Graham, you know, kind of spooked him ever since then. And I'm wondering what your thought is on that, because, or maybe they're both doing, you know, maybe those benevolent and malevolent summoning going on, but that would, it, you know, what's your, well, I'll just leave it at that. I won't leave the question.
Well, I don't, you know, I'm kind of like a live and let live guy. If you want to go summon aliens, go summon aliens. I'm not going to tell you not to do it. It's interesting. Some people do seem to attract, you know, all kinds of paranormal activity, including UFOs. I do think it's really interesting when you hear people who have an experience with a craft, not necessarily being in front of them, but the craft, and they feel like the craft is sentient and can communicate with them by flashes of light or other way. So I'd be the last person to say, you know, if you're going to say, I'm going to summon demons, I'd say, well, hey, it's a free world. It's a free country. You do what you want, but I don't think that's a good idea. But summoning aliens, I'm kind of like, hey, whatever floats your boat. If you want to summon aliens, summon aliens. And would I would not. Along? I don't know if I would go along summoning aliens. I might go along if we thought we were going to see some aliens. Absolutely. Summoning them? I don't know. Well, I'd have to think about that.
Pretty strong word for the CE5 protocols. I mean, you're kind of meditating and remote.
It's summoning, bro.
I guess you're asking them to
summoning.
Oh, you're summoning, I guess, but
it's kind of seancey too.
It got a cult connotations to it, but I mean, that was the gist of it. If I could explain
sure.
a little bit here, is that I was at the point where I was like making contact with things. And I was like, I just don't know if this is a good idea, whatever it is, because you just don't know. I mean, there's that trick element's there. And like, yeah, even though we go in with pure hearts and good intention and all that, you just don't know, because we were seeing stuff, right?
Right.
Like, I had seen enough to go, okay, well, you know, there's something here. I don't know what it is. I don't think I'm going to get picked up and taken, you know, in a spaceship. But and if that's not going to happen, I'm going to get like, why mess around with making contact with it?
Is that what you want to happen? Is that your best case scenario?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, you want to go for a ride, right?
You think they're just gonna be like, "Hey, buddy, pop in, let's go cruise around the solar system." They're gonna fucking.
Well, there are people who have said that they've had experiences like that where they have been taken up. I mean, whether folks choose to believe them or not, I mean, there are people who say they've been had that opportunity and they've been shown things and told things. But you said something about that trickster element, and I do wonder about that, because sometimes I kind of wonder, is like something just effing with us? I mean, you know, because when you go down the rabbit hole, there's like a million different directions you can take things. Whitley Strieber, who I've interviewed a few times, said his wife, his late wife, said something that the whole phenomenon, I don't even think he calls them aliens. He calls them the visitors or the others. I forget which it is. But she said that this whole phenomena has something to do with death.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know what that, I don't know. I don't know. But I guess what I'm saying is that it just seems like the phenomena, all these phenomena in general, almost sometimes seem like they're conscious in the sense that they don't want to be discovered, that they want to keep you guessing. And then that gets into the whole trickster element. I mean,
yeah. And even going back to the, you know, the fairies and the fairy circles and all the stuff going back, you know, ages and ages, hundreds, thousands of years of all these experiences that people had that could be kind of similar. I'm not one that really, I don't really think that that's the full explanation. Like a lot of people say, oh, it's the same thing manifesting in a different way because of our era. I don't really think that, but I do think there's definitely similarities.
But I mean, what a fascinating time to be podcasting. Like when I was thinking about the years between when we first met and everything that's happened since, and mm-hmm. you started off talking about the skeptics, and I was thinking, you know, it's interesting because in my opinion, that whole skeptic movement that was sort of coalescing around the time when we met in that paradigm symposium was kind of trying to, I think, piece together some of the paranormal and the fringe stuff with the real scientific stuff going on, like in Egypt, for example. I think the skeptic movement kind of just died. It's kind of lost the battle. And I mean, you've been a big part of this because you've gathered so many stories from people, and people have been able to now finally, without ridicule, talk about their stories and their sightings and experiences. And, you know, and now we've had the whole UFO disclosure thing happening. I mean, Stephen Greer, Darren mentioned Greer. Greer was just on Patrick Beck David. I mean, like it is a fascinating time. Rogan's had people on, like, it's really getting some mainstream attention now.
Oh yeah. And you look at people like Dave Foley, who, you know, was on like sitcoms and stuff, and now he's part of the UFO thing, and the actor Thomas Jane and all these higher profile people are starting to raise their hand and saying, yeah, I agree with this. And I think, and I'm just a one little pebble on the whole beach there of people who have been elevating these discussions. And love him. I know a lot of people like him, a lot of people don't like him, but I give Rogan a lot of credit for elevating those voices. And you know, I'm not saying that I agree with everybody he has on the UFO topic, but he's facilitating the conversations and he's bringing them to a greater audience. And I think that's very positive. So, yeah, I mean, I do feel that, you know, back when I started, that the skeptics had kind of like the high ground, like they were kind of controlling the conversation. But now I feel like it's a good point. I hadn't thought about it, that the everyday, you know, people who say, hey, look at this, there's something to this. But I do think that the forces for non-disclosure are fighting back when it comes to UFOs, for example. I mean, if you look at the U.S. government, I think there are parts of the U.S. government who are the same as it ever was, to quote the talking heads, that, you know, nothing to see here. This is all BS, blah, 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 da, da, da. But then I think there's other people in the government who want to get the truth out. You talk about Burchett. You talk about Moskowitz. You talk about Rubio. You talk about Gillibrand. And the cool thing about those names I just listed, Republican, Democrat, Republican, Democrat. So I don't know if in that order, but there's people from both sides of the aisles who want to try to get the truth out. But there's still a lot of resistance. I'll give you an example. Last year, when there was that big congressional committee meeting with Grush and everything, I was watching on the American channel News Nation. And I thought, you know what? I got to see what the big guys are saying about this. So I flipped over to CNN and they were telling me how bad Trump is. And I'm like, well, let me try Fox. And then Fox was telling me how bad Biden was. And it's like, wait a minute. You have two congressmen here, Moskowitz and Burgess, who are basically said while sitting on a congressional panel that there has been a multi-decade cover-up on UFOs or UAPs, if I want to be current, and yet you're having the same old partisan BS. So, you know, there's still a lot of resistance to the getting more information out there. But I think with the internet, and it's been key, that there's more openness to getting the real info out there. And hopefully it will continue, and hopefully we will get more info. And I understand to a certain extent there are questions of national security, and I get that, and I respect that. I consider myself a patriotic American. But I compare it to the Kennedy situation, JFK. You know, there are still documents that are classified in regard to the JFK assassination that are classified under the reasoning of national security. Now, you tell me, 61 years later, the Soviet Union doesn't even exist. What could be the national security reasoning legitimately to cover up documents about JFK? I think we see the same thing going on with UFOs.
Well, there is it's a risk because it's going to blow open you know.
Right. It's going to embarrass a lot of people and prove that we've probably been lied to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a kind of a national security issue. And so
I guess.
Who do you think killed JFK then?
Oh, I think there was a conspiracy. I don't think there's any question about it. I think the mob was involved. I think the CIA was probably involved. And who knows who knew about it and just kind of let it happen. That's kind of my theory.
Yeah. Well, I got a question. Like 9/11.
What'd you say?
Kind of like 9/11.
I won't get into 9/11.
All right, let's do it. A question from 100% Maple Stirrup in the chat. Ask him about Project Bluebeam, like the fake alien invasion. So, I mean, that is, you know, it is, we should probably talk
about it. Yeah, you know, and I think Bluebeam, now I know there was just stuff out about this just recently in the last few days. Wasn't Bluebeam, weren't they projecting like things in the sky? Wasn't that the idea?
Yeah, it was kind of a hologram. I mean, that's what I get.
Actually, I had a campfire story like that one time. But it was like this woman was walking on the beach. It's in one of the earlier books. She was walking on the beach with her family. And she looks up and there's a castle projected in the sky. But it's not like, you know how you look at a cloud and you're like, oh, that kind of looks like a dog. Or that kind of looks like whatever. She said this picture of a castle, you could see the definition of the bricks. You could see like the chain where the bridge went down for the moat. It was that defined. And I mean, think about it. And again, this is with my understanding of aspects of Bluebeam. I could be incorrect because it's been years since I've read anything about it. But I thought part of the idea was you would be in a battle and you could project something into the sky and basically freak out your opposition and make them think it's a religious experience or whatever. I think that's 100% plausible, because if you're in a war, you're going to do anything you can get to get an advantage over the enemy. Now, if that technology could be used in other ways, who knows? But again, that's with my limited understanding of it.
Okay. I just happened to notice you've got a true crime podcast too.
I haven't done for years. But actually I'm thinking about restarting it. You heard it here first. But I was a big dummy on that one because I have a plus club that people sign up to get extra shows. And I didn't make that one free. I put it in the plus club. I actually started it before the Serial podcast. Before true crime was popular. So right. If I had actually left that free and open, I'd probably be known for true crime and we wouldn't even be talking about paranormal, though I love paranormal. But my favorite true crime story actually comes from, I guess favorite's a bad way to put it, but the most incredible one that I think of is when it happened right here in Cleveland, Ohio. And it was in the 1930s. And they started finding people with their hands and their heads cut off. And it was called the Torso Murders. Coincidentally, I grew up in the inner city of Cleveland, and the first body was found about 5 minutes from where I lived. One of the main suspects was a doctor at the hospital I was born at. Wow. But here's like a weirder thing about it. Now, it was never solved, and there were several victims. This happened in the 1930s. You guys familiar with Elliot Ness? From the Untouchables, Well, he was in Chicago and helped break up Capone and the mob and so forth. But after that, he moved to my hometown of Cleveland, and he became safety director. And all these torso murders happened while Ness was, or most of them happened when Ness was safety director. So it was like Ness against the serial killer. And they never really found the guy. There is kind of a urban legend that they did find the guy, but he was politically connected. So they didn't want to do it publicly. So they institutionalized him. And after he institutionalized him, there were no more murders. But Elliot Ness actually went on to run for mayor of Cleveland, did not win. But I just thought that Elliot Ness tie-in is really interesting. And I'm very interested in true crime. And I think it's like a Venn diagram that a lot of people interested in the paranormal, like there's a subset that are also, I think I just gave the Illuminati sign. That was not intentional.
Oh boy. Okay.
I just realized it. No secret sign there. That was just poorly done.
The Venn diagram.
Yeah. But anyway, I think it's like a Venn diagram. I think a lot of people interested in true crime are also interested. But usually what I did with that show, it was not like he stabbed her 57 times and twisted the knife. It was more me interviewing authors. But I did a lot of interviews, interviewed a Pulitzer Prize winner. And it's a fascinating subject. And I'm thinking about jumping back into it and doing some more.
Why is it so popular?
Well, I think a part of it is people like to be scared. People like to understand how these horrible things can happen.
Yeah.
I always looked at it this way, cause I had kind of a moral issue with it. I'm like, am I like capitalizing on, other people's despair and things, but I always tried to think of it as if I get one more person to lock their door, if I get one more person to, you know, walk to the parking lot with a friend, you know, maybe somebody could, I think I did about 200 episodes of that one. And I thought, you know, if one person avoided like some horrible thing, I mean, doing that podcast, it was worth it. So I tried to always think about that way. And I never conducted it like in a grisly, you know, kind of manner. Now, maybe it would have been more popular if I did, but that's not what I do.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I've never really liked the true crime stuff. But I mean, women, apparently women are quite attractive.
Yeah, that's like the number one demographic for true crime. So I don't know exactly why.
Well, I heard from somebody that it was that women like to put themselves in that scenario and then see what they would have done or something.
Try to figure out how they would have gotten out of this scenario. I see. One of the most chilling ones, one of the last ones I did before I wrapped it up for whatever time I wrapped it up, there was this one guy by the name of Israel Keys. And what he would do is he would get his various tools of the trade, I guess, masking tape, whatever he would use, and he would make murder kits and he would bury them around the country. And then he would just randomly pick a market and go to it and dig up those murder kits and just randomly murder someone, which that's terrifying. That's because it's just luck of the draw at that point, right? And I don't think this is a couple of years ago I did this interview, but I don't think it was, didn't matter, you know, male, female, age. It's just like a person. I'm going to kill that person. And it's just, ugh. But there's so much development now with citizen investigators. Some of that's good, some of it's bad. But people have broken cases. There's one lady who figured out how to use DNA results and so forth and has cracked numerous cases that the police couldn't crack for years. Although that's a sticky wicket because, you know, people get on these internet boards and they start speculating who killed somebody. And it's like, well, wait a minute. The people you're speculating about are real people. You know, you can't just get on. It's not like you're watching The Sopranos or, you know, really date myself, Who Shot JR? It's not like that. You're talking about real people and you're like slandering real people. So it's like most things, there's good and bad to it.
So do you have any predictions for where the paranormal, where UFOs, Sasquatch, any kind of real headway in any of these areas, whether NDE? I mean, I know there's so much research going on NDEs. I mean, I think in my opinion, it's all kind of bubbling in a way. It's all kind of getting more, more prevalent, but any kind of like,
I gotta think that, you know, the UFO subject is ripe for, you know, there's really some forces coming to bear saying you got to disclose this stuff. I think the rubber might hit the road. Now, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I thought we'll never learn anything. We'll just, you know, we'll just continue kind of stumbling in the darkness. But I think with that topic, they're people who are determined to get more of the truth out. And I think they'll be successful to some extent. I don't know that we'll get all of the truth, but I think more is going to come out and I'm cautiously optimistic. On the other things, you know, I think research continues. Near-death experience to me is one of the most fascinating. I think about near-death experience. How did the scientists explain when somebody has a near-death experience, when they float above themselves and they can explain everything that the medical people are doing? There was one great one. We had a an author on a doctor who wrote a book, and he told a story of somebody had a near-death experience, and they said the doctor was operating on him, and he saw the doctor was flapping his arms like a chicken. And when he heard this, he thought, well, that's stupid. That's a stupid thing. The doctor was flapping his arms like a chicken. Turns out, and this guy would have no way of knowing this, to keep sterile when the physician was, I promise I won't do the sign of Illuminati again. So anyway, but what he will do is he would use his elbows to point at different instruments. Give me a scalpel. Give me this. Give me that. And it looked like he was flapping his arms like a chicken. Now, how do you explain that, skeptics? That people can see these things when they're dead or unconscious. They're floating out of their body. They're seeing it. I really think there's something to NDEs. I'm interested to see where that goes to. So there's a lot to look forward to, and I hope that I'm around for a couple more decades so I can see what happens.
Keep an eye on a pattern of 3 days. I just did a bit of research and a presentation on this enigma of 3 days
because
found a bunch of references in ancient texts and stuff for old NDEs and resurrections all being 3 days. And then we had a guy on, amazing story of an NDE. He was dead in his body bag for like a half hour, and a rookie EMT against the rules and against his boss's wishes revived this guy, and he saw the whole thing happen from his name is Vinny Tolman, I think, and his NDE was 3 days too, and it just blew me away because I was reading all these ancient stories. So there's some weird thing with 3 days for modern NDEs and ancient ones. Also fasting, prophecy, resurrection, initiations, like a whole bunch of things, but NDE is one of the main ones.
Well, unfortunately, if you take a look at me, I haven't gotten the fasting thing down yet, but I can work on that.
Where can people get the new book, and what kind of, is there like a special, is there more one kind of story than the other? Or is there any stories from the new book that stand out?
Well, if we have time, I can tell you one quick story. It's one of my favorites. Well, they can find the podcasts wherever they get their podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I always recommend people start with Jim Harold's Campfire. That's the real stories. And then also the Paranormal Podcast. The book you can get on Amazon.ca, Amazon.com, you know, wherever you get your books. But the links are all at JimHarold.com as well. One story that stood out, and I think it kind of says something about the weird nature of our reality. It's called The Mysterious Mrs. Raspberry. And basically what happened was that this young girl, she's 8 or 9 years old. Her name's Jennifer. She's from Idaho, I think it was. And her friend, Connie, would always go on these little adventures when they were kids. And this is back in the late 80s when a lot of times kids would say bye to their moms in the morning and they wouldn't come back till dinner. So this day they were going to go to the lake, in which you had to go down an old abandoned railroad track a few miles and go to it. So that's where they were going to go. And this railroad track was one way to the lake and one way to the back. There was no side whatever to get off on. It was a straight shot. So they're going, they go about a mile and they come up on this clearing, and there's kind of these older houses there. And there's a lady, an older lady, putting out some laundry out on a clothesline. And there's some raspberry bushes. And they start talking to this woman. She's really nice. And she asks them, hey, do you want some raspberries? And they're sure. So they kind of stick out their shirts, and the lady puts the raspberries in. They have the raspberries and talk to her a little bit and go about their way, go to the lake, have their little adventure, get ready to come back home. When they come back home, there's something odd. The clearing's not there. The houses aren't there. The raspberry bush is not there. And the lady is not there. It's like it never existed. So they go ahead home. Jennifer's talking to her grandma. She's like, Grandma, here's what happened. She said, are there houses over there? And Grandma says, well, there were houses over there in the 1920s before the railroad came in. and Jennifer thought about this, you know, in her growing up years and couldn't figure it out. And finally, a while before she came on the Campfire show, she calls up her friend who had this adventure with her. And she said, you know, I've remembered this for years. I want to know, am I building this up in my mind? Is this something that I'm just imagining or I saw on TV or something? Did this really happen? And she told her the story and she's like, it happened 100% the way you said it did, period.
So again, another time slip type thing where they're looking back in the past and they're seeing.
Yeah. 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 And that's a great story. One other story, because I think this would be right up your guys' alley. I don't know if you got to see it. It's called The Soft Serve Man. Did you see the one about The Soft Serve Man?
I think
you guys would love this one. So I'm going to actually pull the book to make sure I don't miss anything on this. This was from a policeman in the Southwest United States. He actually kind of didn't say his name. I mean, he said his name, but he didn't say exactly where because he wanted to keep kind of anonymous. So anyway, one night he was working the graveyard shift and he got a call that there was this guy like trying to jump from the overpass onto like semi trucks. And he said, you know, being a policeman, you see a lot of kind of wild things. So him and his buddy went out and they didn't see anybody. All of a sudden, they see this naked guy running through these bushes down below the overpass. And he's got blood all over him. And they go and they try to subdue him. And the guy is like feral almost. He's like biting at them. He's like,
oh, I did. Yeah, this is a good one. Yeah.
So anyway, you know, they're trying to deal with this guy. They're trying to subdue him for his own safety. And the guy's trying to bite him. He's naked. And then all of a sudden, the guy starts to, the one cop tells our caller, hey, watch out. And he found out why, and that's why he's called the Soft Serve Man, because he started to defecate all over himself, and that's kind of what it looked like. But anyway, so they get this guy subdued, they kind of set him aside, and they're looking because they see blood all over him. They look at his teeth, everything. They can't see any nexus for this blood. They think, oh, maybe he like killed somebody. And they go down, they can't find anything, and they come back up. All of a sudden, this state trooper car comes up and it's a couple of guys that Dave, our guy, doesn't recognize. And he knows, you know, all the state troopers, the local cops and the troopers have a good relationship, doesn't know them. And usually they're very friendly and stuff. And these guys were real brusque and everything. I'm like, we'll take this over. And then all of a sudden an ambulance out of the blue shows up. Now Dave has taken notes, because he has to write a report, even though they're turning it over to the state troopers, he has to write a report. And he writes down the number of the ambulance and stuff. And they just basically take the guy, they throw him in the ambulance, they go off, the cop car goes off the state trooper car. Dave gets back to the police station.
And he took a note of the vehicle number and everything too.
Yeah, and he had the vehicle number and everything. So anyway, he like asks around and he says, you know, these were the troopers, these were the badge numbers and stuff. Asked him, anybody know these? Nobody knew anybody, any state trooper with that number. Then he like talks, he gets in touch with the dispatcher, somebody gets in touch with the ambulance company and asks about this number ambulance. And the company says, yeah, we've got ambulances, but we don't have anybody with that number.
Crazy.
So what was that? Was that what that was like an X-Files thing, man? Yeah. I was at a government experiment. I mean, it doesn't seem like the policeman or the ambulance was who they were pretending to be. I don't even know. I don't even know if that's paranormal. I just thought it was really weird.
Right. Yeah, that, well, that's why I like all the variety in there. The one I like was similar in the way of an X-Files. It was I think it was a student in school or something. And he had that memory of all the testing. Like he went through all this testing. Like he spent the whole day going.
Yeah.
Testing.
Yeah.
Some like weird, like MK Ultra or some sort of intelligence testing. And then the next day he's like,
how'd we do on the test? Yeah. They had all these tests and stuff. They even pulled him aside and took his blood.
Yeah.
Because he was doing really well in the test. And the next day he was really excited. I'm like, how did I do on the test? How are we doing on the test? And the teacher's like, what test? Yeah. And all the other students were like, we don't know any test. What test are you talking about? But it was Ray, I think, from Ohio, actually. And he said, I know it was real because I still have a scar where they took the blood.
Wow.
Yeah. So we live in a weird world, and it's kind of fun to be a part of it and help share some of these strange things that people encounter.
Oh, I recommend the book. I mean, it's like, and I love the way the stories flow, and there's all kinds of different stories in there. It's really fascinating. So recommend people get it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Is there anything you feel like we didn't get to?
No, I think we covered it all. I mean, with you guys, I could talk for hours. There's so much to talk about. It's kind of like, I don't know if you remember at Paradigm Symposium, it was a very late night and we'd all had a couple drinks and we had this kind of great bull session. It was you and me and Micah Hanks and Red Pill Junkie, I think, was there. And it's just like, this is a smaller version of that. It's just kind of fun to talk about this spooky stuff. You know, it's just, it's not like doing a show. It's just having a great conversation, and it's always fun to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thanks.
Where can people get that stuff? One more time. Can you give us those?
Right. JimHarold.com, JimHarold.com. They can get links to the book, which they can also find on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, BarnesandNoble.com, and they can find all the podcasts at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the major apps, and again at JimHarold.com. And Graham and Darren, thank you so much for being so nice to have me on the show.
Thanks, buddy. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Hopefully we'll meet again soon.
Sounds good.
Okay, see ya.
And that was a chat with the one and only Jim Harold. I mean, man, he's one of the old G's for sure. I mean, 3,000 episodes. Jeez.
Yeah.
I thought we were doing good, closing in on 1,000. We're just not even close. No agenda's at like 1,700 or 1,800. I think Rogan's at like 2,200 now.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, yeah, Jim. Oh, yeah. He might even be leading like the overall podcast count too.
He's got to be. He's got to be up there. He's got to be up there. I mean, there's a
everybody's loving one ago that
was like, what's that? I thought I seen one a while ago that was up to like 3,700 and something, but nah, there's not a lot. There's definitely, it'd be less than 10, I would say, that have thousands of episodes like that. So anyway, big thanks to Jim Harold for coming on the show. Well,
I just want to say my favorite part, because I mean, having talking to Jim after what we've gone through over the last few years and all that, and then his view on reality, right? And how like strange it is. I mean, that's kind of like the narrative I'm building in my head right now, especially with the intelligence agencies and what they're allowing us to know. Like, it really just feels like it's stranger than we could ever imagine. And they're trying to hide that from us for a while, like from the conspiratorial sense, like, the way my brain goes is like they know that they can't even explain it, and they don't want us to open up to that, you know. And whether that is even from a spiritual point of view, like I saw like an old Sanskrit thing floating around about how powerful we are, right, as humans too, right, how we can manifest stuff and all that. I think that's all part of it as well, right, that it's malleable. So I love that.
I think they're alien lizards. So at least a possibility. Big thanks to Jim for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Even bigger thanks, if you're one of our supporters, head over to grandamerica.ca/support today. Sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation. Hey, you could become a noble person of Grand America. You could even become a lord. Check it out, grandamerica.ca/support. Check out our other podcast, grandamericaoutlaw.ca, for the more controversial stuff, the stuff that tends to get us into trouble. And adultbrain.ca for all the audiobooks. Well over 100 there now. Some new ones coming out soon. Check that out. And contact at the cabin, of course, for the trips. We have a couple trips coming up later this year and some great stuff coming up next year. So check that out. Contact at the cabin.com. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
I'm walking gingerly. Take a look at the big old smile on my face. Kicking around down by the pool of narcissists. The people are many, they preen themselves, oh how they navel gaze. Somewhere over that hill, the gloomy skies cease to exist. I'm climbing that hill, I pass by and pity the poor Sisyphus. I go into hyperdrive. turn into a beam of light. I'm strolling down aesthetic electric avenue. The people are predictable. They say, good morning, how do you do? When out of nowhere, a randomly pure angel in the crosswalk bumps into me. And in doing so, knocks all the evil and all the wind out of me. And it's black as tar, ugly as ever, and of no apology. This angelic mama sings heavenly of the truest theology. Together we're a seraphim dream, forever young with no chronology. 1,000 years from now, we'll be written into ancient mythology. We go into hyperdrive, turn into a beam of light. Can you tell me about the view up there? It's sparkling remarkably, the air is crystal clear. Well, please won't you tell me what it takes to transcend this place? A little bit of heart and a whole lot of soul. Take a look at the big old smile on my face. As my angel says, dance with me and your life will never, ever, ever be dull. I go into hyperdrive, turn into a beam of light. 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 We'll be right back.